Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order. Let the record state that all, or show that all board members are present. Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
Be my privilege. If you could try to follow after me. I pledge allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag.
Of the United States of America.
States of America.
To the Republic.
And to the Republic.
Which is stand.
One nation under God.
Which is stand.
Liberty and all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There is no action to announce in closed session. Comments from board members. Mr. Davis.
Yeah, the one comment I have is to recognize T-Mobile for their generous donation to our children's meal program. It's just been amazing how well the community has responded to this terrible situation, especially for our needy families, to help the district as well as the county with dealing with just a terrible situation for a lot of our families that just don't have the needs to take care of themselves. So I just want to take a moment to appreciate T-Mobile. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Boone.
No comments right now. Thank you.
Trustee Allison.
No comments. Thank you.
Trustee Fleury.
I would like to thank our district leadership for their hard work in this tough time, and also congratulate Richard Deck, who is retiring from the technology department, did an outstanding job. Wendy Marks from MCAA, and we're losing Stephanie Peterson out at Lyndhurst to another district, which is very sad.
Trustee Scott.
No comments at this time, thank you.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes, I'd just like to thank all of our employees, from the food services to our bus drivers, and especially to all our teachers for just taking on a monumental task with Zoom. And I, as a former teacher, I just can imagine what an impact it would have had on me and Mark, just to have that all thrown on me. And I just want to take this time to thank them all. It's really a job well done, considering all the things we've been through in 2020. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would also like to commend all the MJUSD staff, teachers, principals, students, and their parents for their efforts in making our drive-through diploma pickup a great success. I had the opportunity to attend the MCAA, South Lyndhurst High School, Lyndhurst High School, and the Marysville High School drive-through events, and was very impressed by the excitement that I observed of each of them, or at each of them, from the parents and the students. Also wanted to commend all the MJUSD stakeholders in the production of their virtual graduation. I've had the opportunity to watch the virtual graduations, and all of them were very well done. The link is on our website, if you would like to go to the website and then see any of those virtual graduations. So thank you for all the people that were involved in making that a very great success. Next, we have the opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen and the board, and whoever else may be there, because since we're on a call, I couldn't tell you, but I know there's a lot of people there, virtually out in the telephone land. Angela Stiegel, president for Marysville Unified Teachers Association. And this evening, we have basically two things that I need to talk to the board about, and they're related, and they do come up on the agenda later this evening. One is the, what I will call the draft plan for next year. We realize this is a draft, we know that, but just wanted to make sure that the board is aware of the fact that just since this hit the website and people's emails late last week. The union and our bargaining team, our exec board members, have all received a number of communications from members and from teachers. A lot of concern, a lot of confusion, people having a number of issues with this draft plan. One of the things that has really caught people's attention is the idea that all the personal property out of teachers' rooms are going to be removed, all of the classroom libraries and workstations and those types of things that are mentioned, that it's just going to be student desks. And then all of that stuff going into storage. Nobody knows where, but that caused some great angst with teachers, especially considering that most of the stuff that falls under that heading is all stuff that teachers have bought with their own money to support their students and to support their work in their classrooms with their students. I understand that this plan could change, and this may be one of the many things that does change, because I can't fathom that the district would have the space available to store all of the stuff from teachers' classrooms. But just letting you know that there were a number of things that caused what Mr. Cena would call heartburn for people when they saw it. There were things even as far as having to tell teachers, provide teachers with a diagram on how to set up desks in their classroom, as if in rows facing straight ahead was not enough for people who have been doing this for years. And so those are the types of things that, like I said, just caused some issues for people. We're hoping that as we go along through the plan, that those are some of the things that are going to be worked out. That is the hope in life. And the hope for that is that as we work on this plan, the voice and expertise of teachers is going to be valued and respected along the way. And that's how we will make any plan for next year better. I don't think that there is a perfect plan out there. You can't make all the people happy all the time. But with teacher voice and teacher input and the expertise of the nearly 500 professional educators you have in this district, we believe that we can make the plan considerably better between now and August, whatever the plan may be. One of the other things that I'm here for tonight is to once again ask for the board's help. MUTA actually needs your assistance this evening. We need the board to vote no on the two resolutions that are on the agenda this evening. And I realize that this might sound relatively contentious, and with the union talking about trying to be collaborative, that might sound a bit like a misnomer at this point. It is not meant to be contentious. It's not intended to be contentious, asking for the board to vote no on these resolutions. It is simply meant to assist us with developing the plan for next year, along with an MOU for it. We believe that the two board resolutions are at this time premature and quite frankly unnecessary. They will just create more work for both us and the district between now and the beginning of the school year. And I think we can all agree that the last thing any of us need right now is more work between now and middle of August. This morning, the MUTA bargaining team met with district representatives, and the meeting ended up being what we felt like was the first time that we really felt like our input on the plan for next year might actually be welcomed and valued. Today, we actually, in a meeting between the bargaining team and the district representatives, we set up weekly meetings for the foreseeable future in which we will discuss and develop the plan for next year along with an MOU for that plan in order to make it come to fruition and become a reality in our classrooms in August. MUTA believes that a grading system and online platform are pieces of that puzzle for next year. And as such, these two subjects should be part of the MOU for next year and not be board resolutions. I ask you to please assist the nearly 500 teachers of this district tonight and vote no on these resolutions so we can take these subjects up in an MOU and not have the additional task of writing permanent contract language in the next 6 weeks. As I mentioned before, we already have enough to do. I know that board members have heard from a number of members as well. And so I wanted to mention that I really feel like we're getting really close to actually being able to right this ship that represents the collaborative effort between MUTA and the district. And right now, tonight, the board can help give us one more little push by voting no on these resolutions. It's a small task that can make a big difference with teachers right now. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. I would ask, it seems like there's a lot of background noise that's kind of coming up. It seems like there's a lot of background noise. If board members could kind of check their location. Was there anybody from the supervisory unit? No? Thank you. Okay, public comments. Notes, the teleconference meeting, for teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment card located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code, Section 54954.2A, states no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have 3 public comments tonight, and I would hope that you'd be mindful of 3 minutes. We will try to give you a 15-second timeline at the end, and then at the end of 3 minutes, we will mute your phone. So the first one we have is Jacqueline Wooten-Spalo. Would you like to speak now, or would you like to speak? Your item was the new business education section, reopening of schools. So, if you would like to wait till then, or speak now.
Thank you. I would go ahead and just speak now with my statement, and just ask the board to keep an open mind with my statement when it comes to the discussion later on in the meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. Am I okay to start?
Yes, I'm still, yes, go ahead.
So first I just want to say hello, thank you. My name is Jacqueline, and I am a lifelong resident here of Yuba County, alumni of Cordova Elementary, Foothill Intermediate, as well as Marysville High School. I am invested in our community, our economic status, and more importantly, the education of our youth. I ask that you consider this statement when addressing agenda item number 4 of the opening of schools. I know that there is no easy solution, as I am well aware. However, I feel that the kids and their parents should be allowed to choose what works for them in their households. Proposing schools open as usual with an increase of cleanliness and early recognition of illness, with no disciplinary action and marks of truancy that can be negatively impacted in the participation in open school events and activities or promotions throughout the year. Purposefully allowing these teachers to work directly and teach freely without mask shields that will minimize the ability of learning in our youth, cause from distraction and interference, and educating proper enunciation when learning to read. Mandated distant learning, multiple schedule adjustments throughout the year and potentially for the next few years is a for sure way to add stress and a significant negative impact in the learning of our young children. They need love, education, security, and socialization without fear of building close contact relationships with their teachers and classmates. If other districts are not staying closed without fear of legal consequences, is that because there's no actual liability for opening schools? To open and not follow full guidelines from the CDC, emphasis on guidelines rather than mandations, or open schools with increasing areas where the district can actually financially support those changes. The economic impact to the distant learning is potentially preventing both parents from working throughout their households, increasing nightly stress and pressure to complete the daily assignments that may not have been available with childcare arrangements, spending weekends as homeschooling instead of much needed family time. This virus is not going to go away in the next school year, most likely the one after that, which is why myself and many other parents are pushing and encouraging to allow the district, the people, the students, the teachers, the employees to proceed on with their usual routines, increase the custodial staff, and request that all faculty members help instill good hygiene habits, increase hand washing in our youth, early recognition, prevention, without halting the community, economy, and without interfering with the social and educational development of our kids. Lastly, the parents request public announcements as the plans change. Tentative plans and communication are better than no form of communication itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wooten-Salo. Would it be possible maybe for you to email that to Mr. Cena, a copy of that, so he could distribute it to the board members?
Yes, that would be fine. I could do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Alicia Wright.
Hello, thank you. My name is Alicia Wright. I have been teaching for nearly 20 years, with 15 of them in MJUSD. I've worked in both elementary and middle schools, as well as at the district office through a technology grant, and I've worked as a mentor to high school English teachers. I'm also a parent of two MJUSD students. I have the utmost respect for the district, and I really appreciate being given the chance to share my thoughts on the upcoming school year with them as both a teacher and a parent. I believe truly that everyone's trying to plan the best possible situation for all students and families within the tough, ever-changing, and sometimes unknown parameters. I've also worked with MUTA over the years, and I'm thankful for my contract, my pay, and always knowing that there are people working hard to protect my teacher rights and to fight for me when I may not be strong enough to fight for myself. I am speaking today to urge both the district and MUTA to work together. I'm asking the board to encourage this partnership as well. But the key here has to be togetherness. As a teacher who's supportive and active with both groups, I've been disheartened lately by some of the behaviors I see and the comments I hear. It does no one any good for me to repeat any comments or who made them, and that's not my intention today. I will not choose sides. Instead, I'm begging both sides to work together with mutual respect. As the district plans for student and family needs, I hope they will always remember teacher needs and rights and discuss them with MUTA. As the union fights for our teacher needs and rights, I hope they will always remember what's best for students and families as well, and listen to the district's concern and parent concerns. I hope that both sides can communicate and listen with an open mind, rather than a personal agenda. I believe we're all here for the right reasons, and I beg of both sides to work together and never lose sight of our guiding principles. I beg the board to make this happen by voting no on resolutions that have not been reviewed by our union and our teachers. Let me be clear, I'm not urging a no vote because I don't like the Google platform or the gradebook. In reality, I use them, I value them, and I think that they are good goals. I'm urging no because both sides did not come together. I can't sit back and not speak up now simply because I like the proposal that MJUSD is putting forward. There may come a time later that an issue is more personal to me and my needs, and I want to make sure that there's always a strong respect for the collaboration and bargaining process between MJUSD and MUTA. Thank you for your time, and I hope that everyone involved can be role models for the positive, collaborative conversations that we work tirelessly to teach our students to engage in. thank you for voting no on the district-wide virtual platform and grading requirements at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Next, we have Amanda Bowman. Amanda, are you there?
I am. Hi, my name is Amanda Bowman. I have been in the district for 15 years. I'm currently a special education teacher at Yuba Gardens. I wanted to talk to everybody today in regards to how we are treating our students and our staff and each other, and just how the lack of communication has impacted everybody. I'm currently teaching summer school, distance learning, with my most severely disabled. I'm realizing that there isn't one answer for our grading system yet. There isn't one answer for what online platform may work for them yet. I mean, I have students that are functioning very low, and I have students that function close to grade level, and I'm finding that as a special education teacher, I'm using every tool I can get my hands on. So as I was reading through the agenda, I was really concerned that a decision might be being made too quickly based on the whole wanting to get things set up and moving forward, which I absolutely understand. August is coming very quickly. But I think we should take some time to look at what's working, what works for that kindergarten classroom, what works for that middle school classroom, what may work differently for that high school classroom, and listen to our parents. I have the great privilege of having multiple paraeducators that work with me have students in our district at all levels. And I have talked them through, and we have explored different teaching models and programs and platforms throughout this whole distance learning time. And I feel like, and they voiced to me, they feel as though we still have some conversations to be had. So I would hope that before we push these resolutions through, that we could have some conversation and just decide what we think is best, okay? I think those are the only two. And I gotta tell you guys, doing Zoom meetings is way easier than on the phone. So you guys are awesome. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and have a great day.
Thank you very much. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena.
Together, serving every student every day in every way. Since March 11th, our collective responsibility to slow the spread of COVID-19 has influenced everything we have done. All stakeholders have worked together to serve every student every day in every way. This was first evidenced by the Herculean effort to develop and implement distance learning, facilitate positive relationships with students and families, and foster student learning and growth. The second was to find a way to honor and recognize our 2020 graduates in a safe and healthy way. The immense energy of the collective effort at the sites and among the eighth grade and high school leaders and staff members to provide virtual graduations for all eighth graders and seniors, and drive-through diploma pickups for all graduating high school seniors is inspiring. Thank you to site leaders, to teachers, to our instructional technology team, to our educational services director, our grounds maintenance and custodial leadership and staff, our program services director, and our attendance and discipline director for working so closely to provide these virtual graduations, drive-through diploma pickups, so students could walk the stage, they could receive their diploma, have their closest family members with them, and have friends and family view the experience in real time through live streaming. This was not a traditional graduation, but it was the next closest thing under the circumstances. The tremendous amount of shared communication and effort to plan the activities, coordinate details, communicate expectations to all involved, arrange the physical settings, communicate to surrounding homeowners what was going on and why, and enduring the 100 degree heat on Thursday and 25 mile per hour winds on Friday is a testament to working together to serve every student every day in every way. Our next challenge is school reopening. Tonight's board agenda features adoption of K-12 science curriculum, so our science teachers have digital instructional materials aligned with next generation science standards. We have a PowerPoint presentation from Dr. Rocco Greco on our district's thought process related to school opening, and the board resolutions for the board's consideration to provide a strong foundation for distance learning 2.0, which we view fundamental to successful transition between instructional delivery models utilized as the spread of COVID-19 changes. In order to successfully reopen school, we will have to work together to serve every student every day in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next we have Superintendent, item one, approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 5/26/20 and the minutes from the special board meeting of 6/9/20. Is there any discussion regarding those minutes? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second, Paul Allison.
Second by Mr. Allison. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Yes.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott? Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Aye.
And Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7-0. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that the board, a board member would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
A motion to approve, Susan
motion
Scott.
Motion to approve by Ms. Scott. Is there a second?
Second. By Mr. Davis.
Second by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Yes.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
And Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Moving on to page 7, new business, educational services, 712 English Language Arts ELD materials. The purpose of the agenda item. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing for the approval of grades 7 through 12 English Language Arts ELD curriculum. Public hearing is now open. Do we have anyone speaking to that, Mr. Cena?
Yeah. Yes, I'm here, Randy. Can you hear me?
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Greco.
Thanks, Randy. So the purpose of this today is through the SPM process earlier this year, we had some inadequacies found through the SPM process. One of those was that I believe in 2017, we adopted a curriculum for the secondary sites, an English curriculum that did not have what's called embedded ELD in it. So we adopted what the state would call a program one curriculum. In order to be able to serve, to be used to meet the ELD requirements for our ELD learners that are mixed into those classes, it would have needed to be a program two. So at that point, we're left with two options, either readopt English curriculum during this time, or to add what's called a program five to that. So the program five ILIT, which is being recommended tonight, is one that's already used and has shown data to be successful in the district. And this program would be augmented and added along with the new ELD program specialist. They would work with ELD teachers and then teachers who teach embedded ELD standards for ELD students in their classes to work with those students in order to assure that they're getting the curriculum they need, the standards they need, and making the progress towards English fluency that we all want.
Any questions or comments from board members?
I guess the question I have, this is Randy Davis, is if we do not accept this today, what's the consequences?
So if you didn't accept this today, we would have to go back. And first of all, we would have to talk with FPM through the CPM process about what we would do to rectify the inadequacy. At that point, we would either have to look at one of the several other Program 5 options, or we would have to go back and go through an ELA adoption to adopt a Program 2 curriculum for all of the 7-12 schools in order to be able to fill that. So the consequence from the state, and you never know what that would be, but they could choose anything. So a lot of this is supplemented by restricted funds that we would call Title III funds. So they would have the ability to audit or remove Title III funds for our failure to comply with the needed curriculum for our students.
Thank you.
No problem.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, is there a motion to close?
Sorry. Yeah.
Cool, go ahead.
Have district teachers looked at this? How did we decide on this curriculum?
This is one that's already used in the district, so there are sites that are already using ILIT.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Is there a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close.
Motion to close public hearing by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Was that Ms. Who was that?
Mr. Fleury.
That was Mr. Fleury. Thank you. Seconded by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Aye.
And Rasmussen is a yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Now, is there a motion regarding the instructional materials?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
I'll second that, Susan Scott.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Educational Services, item number 2, the K-8 science adoption. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing for the approval of the grades K-8 science curriculum as recommended by the 2019-20 MJUSD K-8 Science Curriculum Advisory Committee. Public hearing is now open.
Okay,
Dr. Greco?
Yeah, here again. So for K-8 was, I feel, probably a cleaner adoption than the high school, and we'll talk about that when we get to it. When the teams came to voting at the end, there was fairly unanimous decision for adoption of the materials. The benefit of adding these materials at this time is the current adoptions that we have do not have any digital context, so there's no way to easily move it onto the digital world for when we are in distance learning. The adoption team worked hard. They like the materials. They have consumable materials that are available for all of our paper-based needs, which will help supplement up in the foothills, as well as having the digital platform available for everybody through these materials.
So, Dr. Greco, were these items piloted last year?
They were piloted this year up through when we went into our COVID, whatever you would call it, state.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? If not, is there a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close the public hearing by Frank Frost.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
I'll second that. Paul Allison.
Mr. Allison. Thank you, Mr. Allison. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Aye.
Rasmussen is yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 3, educational services, 9 through 12, science adoption. The purpose of the agenda item is to Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Before we move on to the 9-12, we need a motion regarding the instructional materials for K-8. Is there a motion?
I move to accept the instructional materials for K-8.
Is that Mr. Allison?
Yeah.
Mr. Allison? Okay. Motion to approve materials by Mr. Allison. Is there a second?
Yes, this is Brandy Davis.
Seconded by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote, Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Now, item number 3, the 9-12 science adoption. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to approve approval of the grades 9 through 12 science curriculum as recommended by the 2019-20 MJUSD 9 through 12 Science Curriculum Advisory Committee. Public hearing is now open.
Okay, board, so for the 9-12 science adoption, this adoption is not what I would call the cleanest process that I've seen, and there are some hesitations in it, but I do want to give everyone the background and why the recommendation is being made. So we went, and this is going to have a little bit of a backstory, and I apologize for that. In 2017, the district chose to move towards a course model for science. So for brief understanding what that is instead of teaching the 4 different sciences, because we have a 3-year requirement, the district moved to what's called an embedded earth science curriculum. So earth science is mixed into the 3 other sciences so that you get all 4 years of the standards in the 3 years that you're doing it, which is a benefit if you're able to get through it for the students when it comes to testing on the CAS or what goes along with that. At the time that we adopted the 3 course model, we did not adopt the curriculum. So the teachers still had 4 course model textbooks, so individual ones. So they began to work to create earth science resources, and I believe worked fairly tirelessly to be able to create those things to add into what they were doing. So as that went on, we got to this year, and this year they started the adoption process. And they started with 1 material from HMH, which is the one that's up tonight. Through that process, we got to December, and at the beginning of the process, there was 2 publishers that actually had created full 3 course models. The adoption committee omitted one of those to begin with and went with the other one to start. They piloted that through Christmas. At Christmas, there is still not another full set of materials that had been set up by any publishers. So there was a series of 2 books, but not the full 3 course. The publisher allowed us to continue piloting because there were some hesitations from the teacher. Publishers came out, went to classrooms, worked with the committee a bit, and then we hit this COVID state that we're in right now. That said, as the committee went through, there was the ability to look at Edmentum kind of at the end as trying to find another resource for them because, again, the offerings for 3 course model are just not really there at this time. And that puts us in the conundrum of right now. So when we held the vote, the committee, you have, I believe it was an 11-3 vote, 11-4 and 3 against. Now, 11 of the 4 votes did constitute in their voting for this curriculum that some of that it was a fear that if they didn't adopt, that they weren't going to get to adopt in the future because of budgetary concerns and everything that's going on right now with that. So that would still leave a positive vote for adopting the materials. The other options that they were given were to hold off on a year, continual piloting next year, and take that time to be able to look at other things. But in that time, they would have to go back to using the old materials. Some of those materials are as old as 1999, and there is absolutely no digital resource for them. We would also have to look heavily to be able to find replacement materials to replace the books that were missing. The HMH adoption tonight has full consumable materials for each of the subject areas in a three-course model, as well as good digital and assessment tools that go along with it. But again, this isn't like the elementary process. I don't feel this was as clean an adoption process, but given the situation that we're in, I do believe that adopting the materials is the only choice we have at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Greco. Any comments or questions from board members? Not hearing any, we'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Frank Crawford wishes to close the public hearing.
Motion by Mr. Crawford to close. Is there a second?
I'll second that, Mr. Allison.
Second by Mr. Allison. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Aye.
Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Now, is there a motion regarding the instructional materials for 9 through 12?
Mr.
Motion to approve.
We accept the instructional materials 9 through 12.
Is that Mr. Allison?
Yes.
Okay, motion to approve or accept by Mr. Allison. Is there a second?
Seconded by Randy Davis.
Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Okay, educational services, number 4, reopening schools for the 2021 school year. Purpose of the agenda item is for staff to provide an overview of the district reopening schools for 2021 school year. It's an informational item only. Dr. Greco?
Okay. So what I do want to say as we get started is you have a brief PowerPoint that was put together by myself, and it is intentionally. This is a complex process, even sitting across the table, like in person, where you can show resources to try and explain in a couple of hours. So I'm going to try to summarize what everyone has been working on and kind of give you the data for where we're at. I think what the union said earlier, what Alicia, what Amanda said, is there's still conversations to be had, and I think that's all very legitimate. I do want to say for anyone that it caused heart rate about stuff being removed from rooms that we're going to talk about in a little bit, that's not the intention. I'm married to a teacher, and I know very well what my life at home would be like if I just showed up and took all the stuff out of her room without talking to her first. So that said, I do want to jump into the presentation. So some background knowledge that we have to talk about in this is, as you've kind of heard tonight, and you tend to hear a more vocal one side of this argument, we have people in a very polarized time with very different opinions on what's going on right now. So we have families that are walking around, no mask, no concern, it's not happening here, it's not a big deal. And you have people who have been at home for several months avoiding everybody. And there is no right or wrong, because the information we're given is just as varied. The facts that we get are just as varied. You can find an argument to support either side of what's going on. So in that, I think it's important to point out that we're going to have to be flexible and make sure that we serve all of our stakeholders, regardless of where they're at with it, and offer the education as best as we can within the health guidelines, knowing which guidelines are able to be bent for our benefit of getting students before teachers as much as possible, and those that absolutely can't for everybody's safety. I want to remind everyone that this educational system is much about education, but it also is linked to our economic engine locally. And as people have stated already tonight, if we can't get kids back in school as much as possible, that becomes very difficult on families, and we recognize that. That said, emotions are going to be high, and board members and district employees and teachers are all going to have arguments coming from both sides about this. And as I like to say, on March 13th, when we were looking at trying to stay open as long as possible, and we were getting a very vocal cry to shut down as other districts around us all shut down, those very same voices a month or so later were the ones arguing very loudly to open back up as quickly as possible. So there's going to be emotion, and we have to try to keep this based on logic as much as humanly possible as we move forward. Our guidance that we get, and I put guidance in air quotes, from the state public health and local health officials are not always aligned, and they change regularly. And so as you'll see in this presentation tonight, as we get to the end, I'm going to have to veer us a little bit from the presentation, because this had to be submitted 7 days ago, and 7 days in COVID time is like a lifetime at this point. So the big thing that I want to bring everyone back to, and I think this is what I heard relayed from Yuta and everyone earlier, is relationships are going to be the most important part of this, and they're the most important part of education. And how we handle those, even when we get rushed or hurried, even when we have the desire to not listen to each other at moments because decisions just have to be made, we have to make sure to put those relationships in the forefront. I believe that goes very much for teachers and students. As I talked to different teachers and went around the district talking to folks, I think one of the biggest things you see is that I don't think anyone thinks distance learning in the format that it was as we had to hobble it together. Everyone did their best, but it did not go well. The things that the governor put in place for equity definitely worked to hinder some of our efforts. And so there would be things that would have to be revamped. But all of that happened after teachers had their students in their classroom for months in order to build relationships and build the ability to be able to do things with students. So you have two types of students that come to us on our classrooms. You have the student who is willing to learn, shows up, ready to go every single day, and will do it with or without us, though they do it better with us, obviously. But then you have a large chunk of students who require additional motivation. And that's kind of what our teachers do, is they build relationships with students, and then they leverage those relationships to get those students to do more than they would normally be motivated to do. They help families bring out the best in students. They help students see the best in themselves. And if we can't get students in front of teachers to build those relationships at the beginning of the year, I really struggle to see how we're going to be successful with our population on distance learning. So I think all of our plans as we look at this has to be, how can we get students in the classroom 5 days a week as safely as possible? And if we can't get it that much, then what is our very best effort within our means in order to do so, keeping everybody safe and recognizing the differences in our community? On top of all of that, we have to make sure that the plan we have doesn't require us to continue to have to go back and adjust throughout the year to make different plans. The plan we have has to be flexible enough for if we get to a time where there's all distance learning or a time when we can be 5 days a week, it has to be something that transitions, because the additional workload of trying to create new schedules and move through the year becomes untenable for teachers, for administration, and for everybody, as well as for families trying to plan with that. But I think that in all of that, the one thing that you need to hear is distance learning will be a component of next year. There, unless you can double the facilities and double the amount of teaching staff, there is no way within current health guidelines, even bending those slightly, that you can get all of the kids on campus. It's just not possible. So distance learning and the format we choose to use for that is going to be a component of no matter what we do. In order to bring our students back, there are some things that we need to work on, and there's some other directors who will be able to speak to some of these things later. But we have to socially distance our students, and that means reducing the numbers in classes and on campus at any given time. In the classroom is a challenge. A huge challenge is secondary schools and the transitions that they face and how you move 400 or 500 students around while maintaining that for contract tracing and keeping students separated for the health concerns and by protocol. We're going to have to clean. We're going to have more people to do that. And I think what was said earlier by Ms. Wooten-Salo is part of this as well, is that everyone's going to have to play a role. Families, students are going to have to play a role in the protocols and in the cleaning and making sure that everything is safe. Because as I said, there's a spectrum of people's beliefs. But one thing you can believe is that if we can't do this safely, if we can't do it without having cases, no matter what that means for ventilators and hospitals, if we start tracing tons of cases out of our schools, then they will force schools onto shutdown, and that puts us back in distance learning. So the importance for not just families and students and their education, but for the economic engine that we do a good job of making sure we maintain this is critical at this time. Now the masks become a very polarizing issue. And I don't believe it's practical or useful to have masks on small children. And I think we're gonna have to look very carefully at the balance of safety and the masks in the classroom. But I do know that you can't teach phonics to a small child with a mask on. I also know as a human being that I look for visual cues in the face, and that requires a triangular pattern that I look to, and the mask covers a huge chunk of that pattern, so I can't get the recognition. Or if you've ever taught in a classroom, you know that the nonverbal cues that teachers are giving kids all the time by walking around, by giving them the look, are just not gonna work as well with a mask on. And so we'll have to explore options on how we do that to keep people safe. But that's gonna be a huge chunk of this. While we bring kids back, we're also gonna have to accept that on top of the fact that we had lots of students who were working below grade level going in, there's gonna be gaps that were created. We're gonna need to build relationships, but we're also gonna have to deal with the fact that kids have been out of school for a very extended period of time. So behaviors, traumas, and other things like that are also gonna come back. And so mental health and what we do with that for social emotional learning is gonna play a role in us being successful. We're also gonna have to try to monitor keeping kids apart. Now, I don't think anyone thinks that we're gonna be militaristic in the idea of, if you've ever been or subbed or taught in a kindergarten classroom, the novelty of like telling somebody you're gonna keep all of those kids 6 feet apart at all times becomes comical. But then since we know we can't do that, making sure that we're able to keep kids potted as much as possible so that if there is an outbreak or there is a positive case, that we've contained it to a pod of students or something smaller than the whole school being shut down because of it. We're gonna have to have distance learning options because when they're not in class, they're gonna need those. But also there's gonna be points where they're not gonna pass protocol. And so right now, if a kid comes to school and they've got symptoms, and again, for everyone listening who's been in a classroom in October, you know what percentage of your kids are coughing or would be exhibiting symptoms. Unfortunately, a lot of the symptoms, the flu, the cold, seasonal allergies, asthma, COVID, all look very, very similar. So the process of being able to make sure that we mitigate that in the classroom, but also that when kids go home, that we're responsibly making sure they're able to come back, but while they're out, making sure that they have access to the work and curriculum so they don't fall behind. There's gonna be variations throughout the year. So we will, I think everyone in education would predict there's gonna be points where we tighten up and where we loosen up at this point. So our plan needs to make sure that we account for that transition. We're trying to do all of this with roughly a 10% budget cut, and there's a lot of increased costs for the first six things that I just told you. And then in that, we're trying to navigate the variance of what families want for their students based on feelings of safety. And so as much as you hear the students and families saying that we want to open and have kids there 5 days a week, based on the numbers of the people that want distance learning, because there are families that are also saying we want to wait to come back until it's safe or until we perceive it to be safe, that will be part of the solution. And that's going to be the hard part of any plan that we come up with, is going to be predicated on the numbers of students who will want distance learning, the numbers who will want to be in class. And it'll also come down to staff and how many staff do we have in high-risk categories that are or not able to return to these positions to be able to do what we're talking about. So as we move forward, I kind of want to talk a little bit about the logic of the online platform. And I kind of mentioned it before. So let's say we are on some form of hybrid, whatever we come up with, and they're in school a few days a week, they're at home a few days a week. There's going to be a percentage of kids that are on distance learning. And so one of the divides you're seeing across the state in solving this problem is really, do you take students who want distance learning and move them off to a separate school, or do you leave them embedded in their home school? And I think one of the things that this solution or that we're working towards is predicated on is the idea that for Marysville, our schools offer strong community hubs for the community. And so we want to make sure that the staffs who have done amazing jobs of building cultures at school, that the students who are part of those schools get to stay at those schools. And that means being able to serve students both physically and in distance learning. So keeping them there within the school community. When I met with a few parents the other night, you definitely get the pride of people who have grown up, gone to a school, and that their kids are going to attend the same school. And so making sure we keep those cultures strong. But at the same time that you have those kids and some that will be doing distance learning, you're going to have the kids who don't pass protocol. and have to be home, or have a family member that tests positive from COVID and have to be quarantined for a few weeks. And all of them are going to need to stay on pace with their teachers, be able to stay on pace with what's going on academically, but also to keep that strong social, emotional, and cultural tie to the school based on the other things that we're going to need to get creative with and offering, depending on what happens with sports and everything else. Students need a reason other than math and science to come to school, and the social aspect that some of this gets mitigated through, the social aspects, the events, the academica, the chess club, all of those things that students like outside of sports are going to be things that we're going to need to augment and make sure that there's a reason for kids to be tied to their schools. So moving forward from there, just talking about the digital platform and some of the internet limitations that we have. So I went up and visited with Yuba Feather up the hill, and there's definitely going to have to be some flexibility in our solutions for what we look at up the hill because of the internet connectivity issues. But even with connectivity issues, there's benefits to this digital platform. And Brian can talk a little bit to it later on, but we've looked at how many of the resources could be downloaded on the days on campus and used offline, and as well as making sure that all of our curriculums have the paper-based consumable products to go along with them. Brian was able to get on the list, get a 750 activated hotspots for distribution, which should cover our need. Now, it won't solve the issue in the foothills completely because there's places where even with a hotspot, there's no connectivity for it. But in the valley down below, it solves that piece of it as we continue to work towards what we can do for the foothills. We're at one-to-one Chromebooks for students, plus looking for additional devices to have at sites, because anyone who's been in the classroom will tell you that kids forget papers and pencils all the time. So the odds of them always having their Chromebook with them is going to be digital or is going to be difficult. But the Chromebook is going to play an important role in all of these curriculums because of the idea of sharing a common set of class books like we normally wouldn't think about. I can't have a textbook used by one kid and then the next period a secondary student comes in and it's a different student now having contact with that book. So we're going to rely heavily on the digital components as well while they're in school. And then on top of that, working towards with technology, the idea of taking the Google sites and classrooms that people have been putting together during PT and tying them to Clever, GoGuardian, and the MJOC curriculums in one simple to use platform. One of the things that we heard from parents during this time was that there was a vast difference in what they got from different teachers, different schools, from different places. And one of the big things was if I have a kid at the elementary, junior high, and high school, I have to know so many different things. And so what working towards with technology is creating one place, a Clever login that would be linked to the Google site where the teachers are able to go in, they have it posted, the public is able to see on the site what the assignments the kids are supposed to be doing, so because kids sometimes aren't honest about the work they have to do at home. But then from there, they don't have to go searching for links to sign in, they don't have to go for other things. And Brian will talk a little bit about the ID and how to get in easily. But then the fact that Clever will have every single thing in an iPad style format where it's push button to get to all of the district curriculums. And then this working together in time allows us to start leveling the workload across the program, not just for students, but for teachers and being able to work together in grade levels and departments to share resources. So up until this point, so when I submitted these slides at 6:10, so at that point, we had roughly 700 responses of staff going into these decisions. The parent survey held roughly 3,000 responses, and that was paper and online. Technology, there had been two surveys for roughly 7,000 total responses that were both paper and online. And there had been a bunch of site meetings, the two meetings with MUTA, principals meetings, directors meetings, parent meetings, and then numerous conversations with different people from our stakeholder group and then around the district to see what they're doing. Around the state, excuse me. And then, so we anticipate different phases, as I kind of mentioned earlier, for next year. So hopefully this is completely wrong and we will be able to put kids in school full time and none of this will be an issue. However, it would be imprudent for us not to plan like there's going to be phases. So there will be points of distance learning, and what distance learning, we would call it distance learning 2.0, because even if we were doing distance learning, teachers would be able to work from site, which solves a lot of the phone and connectivity issues. It allows them time to collaborate. It would also allow time for call-in. So if you have students who need particular help or families that need help, the ability to come in a distance model and be able to still get those. The next phase would be hybrid learning, which is what is the catchphrase around the state and what you're hearing. And basically that's cutting out the number of days or minutes on campus in order to make it so that you can essentially serve half of your population to a third of your population at a given time on campus while the others are at home distance learning. And the third phase would be going back to school full time. So what the surveys and everything have shown us so far is, so right now what we're being told, and again, there's a lot of unknowns going into this, but roughly 50% of families are currently willing to return to school with protective measures. And then 20% of families are currently telling us they want to remain on distance learning, regardless of that at this point. We've got about 5% of families saying, I want to be on independent studies. And then 25% of families that are still telling us, we're not sure, we need to see what kind of happens at this point. With the staff surveys, you've got 50% of staff saying that they're comfortable to return, 20% saying they will return, but they'd like to see improvement in the COVID numbers in the surrounding counties and locally. 2% saying not comfortable returning to work at this time, and this is classified and certificated. And then 12% of our people identify high risk or caregiving for someone with a high risk, and then 16% are telling us they're still unsure at this time. So as we go into the attendance hybrid, this is where the change happens. And I don't have a way to give you visuals over the phone, but if you look at the first appendix that you were given, appendix one, you can see partially what we would be talking about. So the one change would be is that Monday would become a distance learning day as well. And part of that is because you would have to give time to teachers. You can't ask a teacher to teach all day, even if it's a smaller class, and then still manage distance learning students without providing time for that. So Monday would be time for distance learning. It would be time to work together to create resources. This would also be a time where you could pull in, if you have special populations, special education learners, EL students that are needing more or a smaller group pullout, that you would be able to bring them in. And this would allow for some time in the afternoon as well for doing the daily distance learning check-ins. Why the state hasn't given any guidance on attendance next year, there's some belief that some of that will be that even if we're not having them on campus for distance learning, there would at least have to be some kind of check-in with that student on a daily basis. And that goes into a level of detail that's probably too much for this phone conversation. What I wanna draw your attention to right below the grade 4, 5, 6 on this sheet is the idea of pods. And so if you were to pull the Monday off saying that's a distance learning day, you have 4 days of class. Now, this becomes flexible in that you would have to take the kids in a class. So let's say K-3, for the purposes of distancing, becomes slightly easier. If you anticipate 20 to 30% of students wanting distance learning, and you look at the standard classroom size, so a standard portable is 960 square feet. So if you strip everything out and the walls are just there with desks, you've got room technically for 26 people. Now, 26 people is not realistic because there is furniture, there's gonna have to be path of egress, there has to be a place for the teacher to teach, there has to be other things in the room. So realistically, the state is talking 10 to 15 in classrooms with some people going 18, 20. So if you were to say with the 30 to 40% coming off and then saying 24 to 1, you would probably be able to meet almost all the needs with the group being able to be there 4 days a week. However, you can never predict enrollment. And so let's say we started and we can get all the kids in. Everybody who wants to be at school can be at school. Everybody who wants distance learning gets their distance learning. But as the year goes on, let's say no outbreaks are occurring, families at home start deciding they want to bring kids in. But if health restrictions haven't changed at that point, eventually you're going to get to a point where there's too many kids to be able to accommodate with this schedule. And so that's where this idea of pods would come in. So if you were to take a group of, let's say, 24 students and break it into 4 pods, so you would have 4 pods of 6. If you got to a point where you could no longer distance, the numbers were being too great, what you would have to do is add an extra day of distance learning. So if you were in, and again, the diagram you have still has Monday in it, but thinking of it just for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, what you would do is everyone would be missing the 1 day that they're all doing distance learning. But if the numbers became too great, then you would say, okay, we're going into pods so that the group who are in pod D would miss Tuesday, group in C would miss Wednesday. So instead of going 4 days a week, they'd be going only 3 days a week now to allow us to keep the distancing numbers. But in by doing these pods, if you level them based on intervention or the ability to work with students, that allows us some benefit of being able to work with them. It is still less time in the classroom for students as numbers grow, but it allows us, without creating a whole new plan or moving away, to be able to phase up or phase down. Now, all of that said, I would not say that day one right now, we would go directly back to school. What I would say is the very first week would be teachers meeting with parents and students. Teachers meeting with parents and students in order to do a couple of things. One, these protocols are going to be different. Even as we start holding meetings at the district office and doing things, you can see based on the variance of people's beliefs, how difficult it's going to be to enforce some of these health protocols. What we don't want to do is start up, have a bunch of cases, and have to shut back down. So the goal would be in that first week for teachers to be able to meet with students, probably at the upper grades, students and families at the lower grade. It assuages some of the fear. If I'm a kindergarten parent right now and I'm putting my kid in school for the first time and you've got to limit my access to the school so I'm not able to get in to see what my kid is doing, that's going to give me hesitations. That might even drive me towards distance learning for the year. But if teachers are able to sit down, one, they get to meet with the families, they get to show this is what the classroom is going to look like, this is what the protocols are going to be, this is how we're going to protect your student, this is what you can be expecting on the distance learning platform, here's where you look for X, Y, and Z. It gives us a chance to build the relationship with the family and build capacity to help for the points in time, hopefully minimally, that we're on distance learning. So then you would essentially phase in. So you would use the first week for distance learning, meeting with students, bringing them in. Phase two would be then you bring in the K-3 students, you have them as a group, and then you phase in 4, 5, and 6 as well. So this would be a few weeks of phasing in students in order to build capacity in the protocols and to make sure that we have the ability to do what we're planning to do. It would also give us time to know exactly how many students are going to want distance learning and how many students are going to want to be in the classroom. Part of the ARES, we moved all of our enrollment online this year. So both re-registration and registration are available online. And there'll be an option available for people who want to know which one that they're looking for. And there'll be more information going out on that shortly. But that allows us to start planning because, again, all of these plans are predicated on the belief that there's going to be a certain number of students who want to have distance learning. Now, at the high school and junior highs, again, you're probably looking more at a two-day hybrid. You could get 2 days in realistically with a day of distance learning. You'd have to have a block A and a block B. High schools are harder because by contract they can go up to class sizes of 36, and 18 would be pushing the limits of any given classroom. So if you're shooting more towards the 12 or 15 mark, and again, part of the problem on this is we don't have a standardized size. While I can give you a 960 square foot and say that's the portable size, and about 3/4 of our classrooms are that size, there are also classrooms like in the C building at Lyndhurst that are very, very small. There are some rooms at Ella that would not, or not Ella, at Linda that would not support that. And across the district, you're going to find that. So that's going to have to be factored in as well, is that the room size and maybe who's utilizing those rooms as we go forward in that. The one thing I would say with distance learning is if the distance learning times are there, it wouldn't just be the way we did it before. It's going to be that teachers have the ability to call in students on a need basis. Maybe you've got a group of 5 kids. You can bring in a small group that need the similar type of service. Maybe it's time where a family is having a very hard time accessing, and you're going to be one-on-one with the family and student. That would be kind of the distance and hybrid that you're starting to look at in these cases. What I want to do at this point is there's some serious limiting factors that will kind of contribute into the numbers on this. Transportation, I think, being one of the biggest ones. So just like you have to distance in the classroom, you have to distance with the buses. And so, Greg, are you online right now?
Yes.
Greg, do you want to talk a little bit about the numbers with transportation?
Yeah, so the first thing I'd like to say is if everybody can think about the separation guidelines of every 6 foot, our largest bus carries 84 passengers at full capacity. If we have to separate kids for every 6 feet, that's one kid per seat, every other seat, and then it's staggered on the other side of the bus. So that bus goes from 84 to 14. So that seriously limits what we can do in terms of transporting students when we transport 3,000 plus a day. We just did an assessment and we counted every seat in every bus. And we don't have 75 drivers, but we have 75 buses. And if we put use all 75 buses, that would only be 518 students. So we can't even, it doesn't even come close to even half of what we normally transport each day. On top of that, we are legally required to transport all special needs students that need transportation. So we have to do that as a priority. We transport anywhere between 300 and 300 students. And as soon as we get all of our student data, which should be coming any day now, we can start to build those routes for those students. And we, unfortunately, we're gonna have to use some of the big buses to do it. So some of our buses that could handle 20 kids go down to 5. We're gonna have to use the buses to go from 84 to 14 to try to have as many students on a route as we can. And that won't always work because our big buses can't go down to every single street. So we're waiting on that student data and then we'll start that. One possibility is that we could pick up a certain number of kids early in the morning and then drop them off at a school. And then do a second run and then pick up our special needs and go to their schools and do something similar in the afternoon. But that still only limits us to a certain number of kids, especially with the geographic area that we have. We can't be everywhere doing that. We really have to target a certain number of kids that would need the ride. Any questions?
And then, sorry, and I'm gonna add one thing onto the Greg part as well. So there's another piece to this. So you show up at the bus stop, and let's say there's an 8-year-old waiting at the bus stop, and that child is obviously sick. The bus driver can't just leave that child behind, but at the same time, you can't just leave that child at the bus stop either. So on top of this and the additional cost for transportation, there's most likely going to need to have to be an aide or someone else on the bus for situations like that. And that's going to be a difficult one unless we either look for asking parents to have somebody at the bus stop with the kid until they pass protocol to get on, or until we find another solution for looking at that. But that right there is going to be another issue that comes in with the transportation side of things.
Well, this is Randy Davis, and the question that comes to mind, and it's more of a question than a solution, is that for some of these children who are having a bad time getting connected to the internet, can we not have some of these teachers' aides, whatever it takes, to visit with some of these folks to help them with their lessons? And I know that's kind of outrageous, but I just feel like some of these families feel like they've just been abandoned by the district. And it's more about logistics than it is about anything else. It's the practicality. And so I don't know if you've had that conversation with anybody, but I know it has all kinds of consequences for the contract and the MOU discussion.
And why I don't think that we could necessarily, and again, note, at this point, like I've been telling everyone, no solutions off the table. Let's talk it through and see what we can do with it. I don't see us sending people to houses. I don't know necessarily all families would even welcome us into the house for that. But what I do see is the possibility of utilizing sites in different ways after hours. So having some kind of service center or something at one of the school sites up in the foothills. Right now, we have 180 kids that ride from Wade up in the hills down to Marysville High School on a daily basis. And if we can't transport that 180, my guess would be distance learning becomes a bigger option because of the difficulties in getting there. So in transportation, with whatever we are able to do, there is going to have to be a prioritization. So we have a legal obligation to special education. We have a legal obligation to homeless. We have to then look at what's reasonable. So K-3 students probably go higher on that list because of their age. You're going to have to look in the foothills as well as at certain places like Arboga where there is no safe route to school where walking or biking is even an option. So we would have to go and set up a priority list and then figure out how to route that priority list to get as many kids as possible with the seats available. Knowing that those numbers could shift if maybe we decided to go one every seat, but then you're not at the 6-foot distance, we would have to have some other kind of protocol added if you're going to look to bend health protocols to put more kids on the buses.
Thank you.
The next area.
This is Susan Scott, and thank you very much for that
presentation that you just gave on reopening the schools, but I just like to ask that you had mentioned that you had already had two MUTA meetings regarding this presentation, and I would just like to know how much input that the teachers and the MUTA have on this plan.
We had one meeting today that was a few hours long. We met again last week for about 3.5-4 hours, and then I believe that Ramiro and the bargaining team met with MUTA the week prior to that. I believe there's always room for more input for everybody. And again, it's going to be important because any solution has to be agreeable to everyone. And to create something that's not bargainable is a waste of time. I believe there's always room for more input. And I believe that they want to give more input at this time.
Thank you.
This is Gary Cena. As Susan, just to share specifically, with MUTA leadership, we met on Thursday, May 28th for 4 hours. And then on June 3rd, met with MUTA leadership for 3 hours. And then today, June 16th, 2.5 hours. Mr. Greco has met with school staffs at 12 sites since the middle of May, end of May. Various stakeholders, multiple meetings, trying to get as much input and information from people. As he said, no idea is a bad idea. And volume of ideas generate new ideas. Mm-hmm. So
that's good. I just wanted to make sure that there was input from the teachers and the MUTA. As long as there was input, that's fine.
The next area to look at logistics-wise, and this has been a big one for us in our community, is the food services. When you start looking at plans initially, it was, well, you've got to keep kids supervised at all times. Now, one thing that public schools rely on in order to function, to allow guaranteed breaks, all the things that you have to have as a working human being, is that there's going to be time where you're not going to have to be on. So you get a 15-minute break, you get a lunch, you get some time to go to the bathroom. When you originally start looking at these plans, the idea is, okay, well, the kids are going to have to eat in the classrooms. Now, looking at that, that becomes a nightmare. For one, it becomes very difficult to break the teachers and allow them to have time out. So part of the food services piece is figuring out how we were able to bring a few classes at a time and stagger lunches to the cafeteria on days when it's not so hot, to the outdoor spaces as well. But what we rely on is usually there's a few adults supervising. So you may have between 5 and 10 adults out supervising a large lunchtime. Whereas now you're going to have to keep those kids separated into pods. So either cordoning off field so that each area kids have an area to play where they're not interacting with the other groups as much, which again, logistical nightmare for whoever's supervising that. But we think we've figured out ways in order to be able to have the kids be able to eat in the cafeteria for at least the lunchtime, while the breakfast may be served in the rooms. We'd like to do that as well. I'm going to let Amber, who I think is online, speak to some of the costs and the challenges that go from the food services side right now.
Yes, thank you for having me. Some of the considerations that we know we have to take care of with regards to serving meals is to ensure that the food is packaged when it's served to the students. And our normal service before COVID-19 has been a very unpackaged, scratch-made type meal service. And so we have a bit of a 180 transition to make in either procuring things that are already in a package or making them in-house and then putting them in a package for service. So we're making arrangements to be prepared on that regard. We also know that kids can't transport back to their classroom a tray full of food. It will fall on the floor, it'll drop, and need to be replaced. So there needs to be consideration for packaging that's going to hold up to transporting back to the classroom if that's the preferred method in the in the schools. So it could be a bag or a more robust tray. The other things that we need to look at is whether serving in the classroom is cost effective. That would require a lot more equipment than what we currently have available to us. And rough estimates push into the $100,000 cost amount to provide the appropriate equipment needed for all schools. However, if we are able to stagger and social distance and serve in the cafeteria, the expense would be much minor with installation of plexiglass shields, approximately costing about $10,000. We know that we're going to have to switch modes of service if we can provide meals sent home to students that are distance learning. We will try to do that as well. We are a little bit limited with USDA allowing that option available to us. It's available now until August 31st, and so that's how we're able to serve currently under the curbside model, but there is an expiration date on that. We also have to make sure that we don't serve kids in multiple locations, so there have to be some sort of program integrity and procedure for accounting for a child that's getting a school meal and accounting for a child that is getting a meal sent home, and we can't double dip, essentially. So there's going to be a lot of tracking of who's on campus on which days, especially if the pod format or the Schedule A, B option are used. We have to make changes with our point of sale setup. We can't have any shared contact surfaces, so finger scans and pin pads are going to have to switch to barcode readers and students carrying an ID card, or we use a roster for the younger grades, which would also lengthen the time it takes to get kids through the meal service time. One thing we want to ensure, I mentioned earlier, is the program integrity with the type of menu items we serve. We've made a lot of changes in the last couple of years to really put effort into improving the quality of our food, and that's really important to my team and as well to the parents. So we really want to make sure that we can do really good food for our students, and we really want to avoid buying things that are already frozen and reheat. There may need to be a little bit of that, especially if we have to transition to a home send home meal, but we're going to try and keep the menu items the best we can, that we can do that well.
Thank you, Amber. Does anyone have any questions on the food service side before we move on? Okay. So then moving to the sanitization piece, so this is going to be a big part. There, and I believe Ed is online with us tonight, but part of this is going to be the ability to do so, the timing and everybody's role in this. If you look at our custodial currently, there is no way that in a transition, especially at the secondary schools, this is where this becomes a much bigger issue, because there's no way to get a custodian into every room and do proper sanitization at every desk station in a passing period or in the amount of time that's logistical. And Ed, are you here online with us right now?
Yes.
Do you want to speak a little bit to what that might look like?
No, we do not have Ed Lothar.
Okay. Well, so we'll leave that right now if you look at the day shift of custodians, whether it be a site that has one or whether they have two or three, the ability to get to 30 or 40 classrooms during a passing period isn't going to be feasible. So everybody is going to have to play a role in this, but that's, I guess, part of community building and making sure that we're all responsible for each other moving forward. From a health and safety perspective, this is where we started looking at the infrastructure, the facilities, classroom size. Travis was good enough to go around. They did an inspection of air systems to see, you know, where we had forced air moving, all of those types of things, and what we may be able to do classroom and playground wise. Travis, are you online?
Yes, Director. Yeah, I'm here. How's it going, everyone?
Good. Would you mind speaking just a little bit to what you found?
Yeah, so some of the sites, you know, infrastructure-wise, they're, you know, outdated. We have some schools up in the foothills that we can't really cross-ventilate. So obviously that's a big concern with getting fresh air in and out of these buildings. So as we went through and we did a study district-wide, we made fixture counts of how many classrooms have faucets, hot water for washing hands, and things like that. So we're definitely looking at trying to maximize the space if students were to come back, looking at it from every possible angle. And, you know, every time we come up with a solution, we kind of come up with another problem. However, we're kind of going to outside sources to look at putting up plexiglass shields, how to set up classrooms, what that would look like with storage, as Dr. Greco said about moving things out of the classrooms. But it brings up a lot of questions, right? If we're moving furniture out of classrooms and where does that furniture go? Do we order, you know, 80 Connex boxes district-wide, and where do those go? How does that look with the community? So a lot of the stuff, what we're looking at as far as containing COVID or trying to be as safe as possible is just really studying the infrastructure and coming up with a good, solid game plan. We are right now developing some options for when students do return that have to do with partitions to where we might be able to get close to upwards of 30 students in a classroom if need be. But again, we're still working out the details on that, because the first thing is getting the hand sanitizers in every single classroom along with the partitions. And we're going through and making sure that we mark all the hallways, classrooms with the 6-foot distancing right now. So a lot of it is just really understanding our facilities right now and painting that picture of what it's going to look like and what it's going to take, you know, even budgetary wise and for safety and social distancing.
Thank you, Director. Travis, this is Brandon Davis. And I just wondered if you had any kind of rough, you know, estimate of the cost.
Currently, I'm working on, I've been working with Ms. Lossing, Rocco, Dr. Greco, and Mr. Cena. Currently, a rough estimate cost per classroom right now is anywhere from $7,500 to $8,000 per classroom. That would allow up to 30 students in a teaching environment in a 30 by 30 classroom. And that's with the partition set up. And keeping with CDC guidelines of the social distancing. So that would be just for the facility standpoint. As far as tracking costs for hand sanitization and the plexiglass shields and things like that, procurement, Brian Horn would have the exact numbers on that. But as far as getting social distancing and the plexiglass in the classrooms to get students back in, we're looking at, it, like I said, $7,500 to $8,000 per classroom.
Thank you.
My God. And so along those lines, I don't think that would be the recommendation, is to go full partition like we're talking about. That would be in certain locations. So in many places, you've got cross ventilation, you've got brand new forced air systems. Places like Foothill Intermediate and some of the other places that have less of that would be where we would have to look more into those partitions, not even to get the 30 students in the classroom, but just simply to get to the other numbers we're talking about. So part of this, we're going to have to balance what's feasible cost-wise, because as you can see, all of this starts to add up very quickly. And we want to focus our efforts not just on what we're doing for students right now, but things that are going to benefit us hopefully moving forward as we come out of the other side of this at some point.
Right. And like Dr. Greco is saying, it's not a one-size-fits-all. So we're going to have to go through and assess each site and what their needs are.
Well, the concern I have for, at least for the Foothills, is that because of the intermittent internet contact access, whatever you want to call it, they appear to be the most needy as far as getting those classrooms suited up for at least giving those families the education they need. And so to me, that would be priority. And so if we have to do the whole business of working through what's doable, what's not doable, to me, the Foothills are have been the most problematic during this whole process. Thank you.
Okay, and so in that as well, looking back at the facility stuff as well, some of it, because again, when you start to listen to it, the idea of that many Connex box and moving that many things out is not necessarily feasible. Also, anyone knows that if you have things that are material or not hard-based and you put them in a Connex box, you should probably just throw them away ahead of time because they'll end up destroyed by the end of their stay. So looking at other solutions where it may be for, you know, younger kids in common libraries, that it's just simply for now tape and plastic and covering those up, or maybe a protocol for being able to check out and then how long they have to remain out of circulation after that student's done before they come back in. But those are solutions that we'll have to continue to work towards to try to find that balance between the world we're in today and the world we'll hopefully be back in tomorrow. From the academic program side, consumable materials we have for each of the subject areas. So they'll be able to use those, especially with the adoptions tonight. We would want to look then also at bagging of supplies. So originally when we started looking at elementary classrooms from a cleaning perspective, the problem was, okay, well, let's minimize the furniture. If we're going to have less students, let's decrease the amount of items in here. Teachers had a very good point as you're meeting through them that most of them use those clamshell desks, and most students keep all of their belongings in their desk. So to do that, you would have to leave the desks in the classroom, but that also then yields the ability or the solution to be able to Ziploc bag or bag everybody's materials, learning stuff so that they keep their own stuff at the desk. So there's not a grabbing of a lot of things from communal areas, which would limit some of the interaction or stuff in the classroom. And then working to build capacity, because the online thing, for some teachers, it's like a duck to water and they came out of their programs and this is something that they've always done. And so it makes sense easily. If it's not something that you've ever done and you've been teaching for a long period of time, it's a big shift to the pedagogy of what you do. So making sure that we provide good quality professional development opportunities for teachers to work together and collaborate to be able to build those online resources. That's something that benefits us through this time, but then benefits us in many ways after we're done with this as well. And then looking at essential standards. So here's I think the hardest part of all of this. If we can't have students on campus 5 days a week, we can't expect every single standard to get done. We can't expect that at home, the level of rigor is going to be the same as if it was in the classroom with the teachers in most cases. So that's going to require us to look at our standards, to look at what really is essential to the learning that we're doing, and probably paring down to those essential things with a focus really heavily on literacy and math for the next years, and building that through all of the curriculums in the secondary schools as well. That will allow us to, if we can fill some of the literacy gap, get students reading at a higher grade level and still doing okay in math, when they come back into the classrooms, it'll allow us to fill the gaps quicker than if we're trying to get them up and reading. And so that's a challenge when we have students with us on a daily basis. And so it is something that we'll have to look at moving forward. From the personnel side, and I'll let Ramiro speak to this, we're going to have to look at the employees in high-risk groups, the caregivers, and then the additional staffing needs that we've talked about, in the addition of paraeducators for breaking teachers in these classrooms and all of that. Ramiro?
Actually, I'd rather not address that. That's a personnel matter that's on an individual case-by-case basis, and to some extent, they also require the interactive process. So that's limited information, so ultimately, can't really speak to it in a more broader way.
Okay. And then for anyone who's interested, the state had released some guidelines and CDE released a set of guidelines that has some of the information kind of regarding all of these things in there. And that's a resource that we can make available on the webpage for anyone that's interested in seeing kind of what they're looking at. The final piece that we're going to have to look at is attendance and discipline. And this is a difficult one because, like I said, we haven't been given any guidance yet on what attendance monitoring will look like. Will it be a conjunction of P1 and P2 counts with a hold harmless towards your percentage from the year before, or will it be where the daily attendance, will we have to check in? We just don't know those things yet. But we also know coming back in on top of the regular situations we'll face from a welfare perspective, there's also the new issues that we created. Because there's such a broad range of feelings about COVID and masks and all the rest of it, there'll need to be a learning created for students and teachers. Jolie or Ms. Carrion, are you online? Or Ms. Critchfield?
line. Hello, I'm here. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What was you wanted to talk about how that rolls up to attendance? I think whatever attendance accounting the state comes down with, we're still going to have to monitor that and make sure, you know, families are held accountable and sending their kids to school.
So, Jolie, can I interrupt you? For some reason, it's very garbled.
Yeah.
Hold on.
So I think as Jolie is getting the phone working, one of the big things out of this will be probably the board will see some COVID-related policies or ideas. We don't want to turn this into a discipline situation. We want to turn it into a learning situation for everybody. Regardless of belief about what's going on with this, there is a responsibility to keep our schools free of COVID and to stop the outbreaks. And so coming up with what a program is going to look like, some of the sites have started the idea and working towards PBIS videos. So we have videos about all the different things you can do at school. So like the high school is looking at the science buildings, for example. The arrows will be a flow of traffic clockwise around, so you'll go up one set of stairs, down the other. But then creating PBIS videos or videos to educate students on this is what we're doing and why will be a big chunk of making sure that we don't add to our discipline infractions based on the new situation.
I guess the one concern I have, Ms. Randy Davis, is the tracking. You know, there are students that they hit their computer, their Chromebook, whatever, and sit in there, and then that's it. They walk away and leave their computer on or whatever they have for the period that they're supposed to be in attendance, but they're not there. And so the concern I have is for the students that are really interested in learning and the parents that are really interested in the children learning. That's not the issue. It's the kids that are failing. And how are we going to deal with that group of students?
And that, go ahead. I don't know if the person cut out again. So that is the difficulty of distance learning. I mean, there is no replacement for a quality teacher in a classroom. And for attendance, being a former independent study and alternative ed administrator, getting things done outside of the classroom was very difficult a lot of the time. When you have a student that's got an intrinsic motivation to learn, like you said, that's it's still difficult, but it's doable. If the kid is requiring that teacher who they've got a relationship to be there, kind of hovering to get them to work, how does that happen when they're not at home? And a lot of this is an opportunity to build those relationships and capacities within families. I try to, when you look at state data about attendance, education level at home and affluence are the two things that you can do to make it easiest to create a learner. But that doesn't mean that anyone else loves their kids any less. It doesn't mean that we don't have to find a way, but especially in these times with all of the social issues we're facing around race and class, we need to find ways to welcome those families in, to be more accessible to those families, to find ways to build that capacity. And that's one of my hopes that out of this hardship, that we see coming out of this an increased understanding that we have to take more time in reaching out and involving the families in that process, because no matter what we do as an educational system, we can't do it alone, and we're going to need those families to support us more than ever, which means we're going to have to reach out and make sure that they feel comfortable to do so more than we ever have before.
Rocco,
thank
Rocco,
you very much.
I am back online. Sorry, I got hung up on. I guess you answered everything then, right? That we're going to probably have to do a lot more home visits, getting kids connected, making sure they're in the right program. There will be accountability with attendance no matter how the state comes down, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And that's, I think like Julia just said, the big part is going to be that home connection. And from the school, from the district, from everyone, making sure that we're staying engaged. And if we're not having success with a family and student, doing our best to make sure that we get that involvement engagement out of them.
Yeah. So were there any questions for me? I don't know why you guys can't hear me. I'm so sorry.
Oh, we can hear you fine now.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Shelby.
I had surgery earlier, so I'm home laying in bed listening to this. So just attendance is my big passion, because I know when kids are not going to school and having that meaningful relationship with their teachers, we lose them in so many ways. And so I see the attendance piece, you know, growing and needing more contact and more home-to-home visits, which I am working with probation on. They still have a full-time truancy officer that I work with. So.
Well, and that's a question, Julie, is that how often are these, I would call suspected children not attending, how often are they visited?
Well, we'll have to go through. Before, it was difficult because the attendance piece was different in every situation at each school, how attendance was taken. There wasn't a consistency through ARI. Some were taken on Google Chrome. So we relied on the principals to reach out with the teachers and give us the names of those kids that were not participating. And so we did deliver Chromebooks for those kids that needed them. We helped them get connected if they were having trouble with that. If they needed packets, we make sure we do that. If there were certain homes, clear up and challenge, or places that really were not a safe place to go by myself, we sent law enforcement and helped us a great deal. Yuba County Sheriff's Department was given a list of students, and they were encouraged to give me a call so that I could get them hooked up. So we were kind of, you know, on our back foot when we went into distance learning. It was so sudden, and the teachers did an amazing job, but I think moving forward, we're going to be a lot more prepared. So kids do have to be accountable this time. If you're choosing to go on distance learning, or this is the path you're going to take, you need to follow through with that. Otherwise, you need to be in school or however the other options that we have. So it'll be easier to monitor, I would think, because we'll be on one system that we can track these kids.
Thank you.
But to add to that too, Randy, for Jolie, no matter how superhuman she is and no matter how much she tries, there will be not enough home visits to get to every student that we'll struggle with for the times of distance learning. I mean, that is a reality that we'll have to face. No matter how much we reach out and how much we try, it will take us years to build the capacity to build those relationships and be able to address every family to make sure that learning is a priority.
Yeah, and it's kind of always been that way, to be honest with you. It's always been that way. We kind of have to prioritize. Even when we were in normal attendance accounting, we know when we weren't at distance learning, doing distance learning, there were so many kids that were truant. We had to prioritize our younger kids over our high school kids. To try to get them connected. So there'll be a priority type list that we have to do. I'm all about, you know, every starfish matters. So if we might get overwhelmed with the numbers, but we have to just keep going forward and doing the best we can to get those kids engaged, because every single one of them matters.
I appreciate everything you do. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so to kind of close up the presentation for tonight, and I apologize it's been so long, the summer plan and kind of where we go from here. So there'll be a continued surveying of families. Now, knowing our survey rates have gone way up from where they were last year in the surveys that you were seeing going out, but even then, we're still only getting maybe a third to at best a half of the district respond to any survey. And it gives you a representative sample, but we still want to keep hearing from as many people as we can. The communication with the bargaining groups over the summer, now that we have some inkling of an idea of where we're heading and trying to figure out what's feasible and what we can make happen for our community. And then making sure that the communication, even if it is, we still aren't quite sure, because I think most districts are faced with, we can give you a tentative plan, but understand there's probably going to be changes up through late July in what that plan is going to look like as information becomes available. Hopefully, as information becomes available, it becomes more and more that some of this planning was erroneous, and that we can bring more and more kids back to school, but we'll plan accordingly until then. And then we want to increase the family involvement and as we move forward with this. And so that's, I think, really it in a nutshell. If there's any further questions or comments from anyone or.
Yeah, this is Jeff Boom. I have some comments. I'm going to go back to Susan's question. She asked basically, was MUTA involved in the school reopening plan? And I never did hear a clear answer on that. And then a couple of other questions or things to think about. Families with multiple students, if we do these pods, will they be considered to be in the same pods so that so the parents can still work and not have to worry about having, you know, kids like in three different pods on three different days of the week? And then the other thing is mandates versus recommendations. We talk about, you know, all the mandates and stuff from the health issue standpoint. Are we going to look at mandates versus recommendations so that possibly we can, you know, go to a little more normal school, possibly a little quicker if, you know, if we don't have the outbreaks in our area? And then the deal about requiring masks, you know, unless you're wearing an N95 in your fit test, it's not really that safe, a lot good. Wearing a mask all day long, you have the issue of the CO2, so that you're breathing all day long. So, you know, how do we address that?
Well, so I think to answer some of those, the mask question is, I wouldn't, and I think I said that earlier, I don't know that I would recommend masks, especially in the little kids. You want them when you can't distance. So if we have passing in the hallways, it may be that we're asking them to go on while they're in the hallway, but in the classroom, once they're in and distance, it's impractical. When we started having these conversations and the original thing was teachers were going to have to wear masks in the recommendations we were getting, I tried to wear a mask for an entire day. As it is, through some doctor's appointments today, I had one on for about 4 hours and had a pretty good headache by the end of that. So you're very right, and that's not necessarily 100% feasible. I guess on the N95 thing, you could say that while an N95 is going to be closer to 100% effective down to 0.01 microns, the other masks are not 100% effective, but they're not 0% effective either. So there's going to have to be a balance in that. I think when you look at the multifamily thing, that's something that we really did discuss. And so, like, if the high school, and again, the priority to getting kids in, I think, starts with the K-3. But the ability to understand that if a kid at the high school has younger siblings, maybe in elementary school, if they're not potted on the same day, that family is going to have to probably choose to keep the older student home to watch them. So as much as possible, we would want to coordinate that for families. And I don't know that it would be 100% possible, but as much as thing, just like now when you get a schedule change request for a student saying, you know, I want this because of whatever the reason, we would want to accommodate those as much as humanly possible. And then to the MUTA question, if I didn't answer that clearly enough, I believe they would like to have more communication. I think communication will continue over the summer. I, in the last 2 weeks, have spent 6.5 hours at the table with the MUTA leadership. So I don't know if that's considered enough participation or not in the planning.
Okay, thank you.
And this is Gary Cena. Mr. Boom, those very good questions. You know, with the masks, I mean, it's the purpose for investing this much time and everybody coming together, you know, on the phone and, you know, looking at these things. So, like masks, you know, they say that people wear masks as much as possible in terms of, you know, once people are 6 feet socially distanced, that's a safe, you know, that's what guiding practice tells us. Now, if we're within 6 feet and we're right next to someone, then the personal responsible thing is to wear a mask. I mean, what's got us in all this is the COVID-19, preventing the spread. The reason we're all, you know, spread out in different places and distanced is to do that. So that is a reality And the mask is a tool to help protect and prevent. But this is the kind of thing we're talking about in terms of, like you shared, hey, mandates and recommendations. And that's part of why talking to as many people as possible and getting a feel, because you're right. There are, in the stronger together, there are really few mandates. There are many guidelines and recommendations. And it's up to, school districts and boards all stakeholders basically identifying what's the practice. And that's why having these discussions and talking about it, at some point, we will need to, set our direction of what we're doing. And the families with multiple students, yes, we'll work with certainly at a site, the same site, it seems like it would be easier to people in pods. Now, if the families have students at three different schools, again, every effort, it's going to be more challenging. And, again, the reopening plan, if you talk MUTA members, there have been a couple hundred MUTA members have been involved in discussions, and MUTA leadership, it's 10 hours formally, many hours outside of that. So discussion and reopening is ongoing and is inclusive, and we're trying to involve stakeholders.
I would just like to make a comment and thank all the team. So we had to start somewhere, and I think this is a very good start for putting our plans together for reopening. And this plan, or any of the plans that we come up with, are going to be very fluid. But I think, again, it's a starting point. And I would just like to thank all the folks that were put the effort in and preparing this plan. So thank you to that. And again, I think every plan or any plan that we put in place is going to change weekly, if not daily.
I would just like to add, especially with Rocco's presentation and the department heads and everyone else, it was very informing, enlightening, and very well done. Congratulations to all of you. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Again, thank you very much. So moving on to personnel services. Resolution 2019-20/36, adoption of the district virtual learning platform beginning 2021. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution regarding the adoption of the district-wide virtual learning platform beginning for 2021 school year. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you, Randy. Central to this particular resolution, and certainly from the standpoint of communicating the purpose and the need, we need to understand that we are in unknown, uncharted territory and will continue to be there. Ideally, in trying to establish, implement, and continue to modify the most effective learning program that we can have for our children and our students, is to be adaptable. And to be adaptable typically starts with something that's common, and in this case, provides for flexibility and transition, and certainly ease of transition. When not knowing whether we are going to be strictly distance learning, a hybrid, or simply returning to normalcy, we need to look at options that allow for easier transitions and something that's much more effective to ensure that we do not increase the learning loss. So to that end, this particular resolution asks the board to consider adoption of a virtual learning platform that allows for efficiency, effectiveness, and the ability to transfer and transition from whatever model is handed to us or whatever model we are forced to implement in order to ensure that our students get the best education possible.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Is there any questions or comments?
This is Brandon Davis. The main comment that, if you haven't heard it strong enough, is the role of MUTA and the teachers along with the administrators in this development. And I just want to go on record to say that we cannot move this district without a team to move it forward. And, you know, what we're hearing is not everybody is quite on the same page. And I hope that the district leadership hears that. We know the constraints of the different parties, but I'm certainly hoping that with the dialogue, that people understand we're on the same deck. We may not understand everybody's role, but we are all on this together. And that's been the most disheartening thing about what I've heard from the folks in the field. They don't feel like they're on the same team. We have to get there. And I know that's not easy, especially under these conditions. But I'm certainly hoping that we will get there with this plan. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve by Brandon Davis.
We have a motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second by Mr. Fleury.
Thank you, Mr. Fleury. Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom. Trustee Boom. We think we might have
lost him.
Lost connection.
Oh, I think he's on mute.
Hey, Jeff.
He's not with us right yet. So, Mr. Allison.
No.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
And Trustee Rasmussen. We're going to wait to see if we can get Mr. Boom back.
What's your vote, Hello. Mr. Rasmussen?
My vote was yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, Trustee Boom, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So, Mr. Boom, we had a motion and a second. We were taking a roll call vote regarding the adoption. What is your vote?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now, Mr. Boom.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was on my cell phone and it dropped off. I called on a house number. And I'm just about out. For some reason, it won't let me through on this other number. It's got me muted. But I had some questions and concerns about that. But my vote is no.
Okay. Vote is no.
My vote is no. And my concerns were that, you know, we talked over 200 teachers and stuff, but the MUTA representation was very minimal from the bargaining team.
So I wanted to vote no on that. But you're probably going to lose me on my cell phone because it's about dead. But I rang through on my home phone, and for some reason it's not letting me on the meeting. I'm on the meeting.
So,
I can't respond.
Okay, Mr. Boom, Mr. Williams said he does have you from the home phone also.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Okay, so the motion carries. 5 yes and 2 no. Next, we have Resolution 2019-20/37, adoption of the district-wide online grading platform beginning 2020-21. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution regarding the distance online grading platform beginning the 2021 school year. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you again. In considering the adoption of a district-wide online grading platform system, this particular resolution specifically outlines the use of a K-6 platform and a 7-12 platform. There is room for flexibility in how ultimately these two platforms would be applied, but the central focus here would be to enable communication from our educators, from our schools, to our parents in an effort to streamline a process for checking in and ensuring that students are engaged, are connected with learning, and also to ensure that parents, through their portals, are able to access progress information, student grades, and progress towards meeting standards. So ideally, it simplifies through a common and consistent approach of using a method to input grades, track grades through a standardized grade book that's allowed within these platforms, and ultimately ensure that parents, families, and students as well can access progress checks, progress grades, and ultimately have the ability to communicate through these platforms. I recommend the board approve the resolution as presented.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Is there any questions or comments?
No, yeah, from Jeff Boom. My comment would be same as the last one. Sorry about that hiccup there. Anyways, you know, I understand that teachers union has been involved, but I don't think their involvement was what it should have been from the get-go. They feel like they're more involved now. I understand there's been a lot of teachers talked to, but it basically wasn't the MUTA representation that does the bargaining for them. So they haven't been really on board with this the entire time, or talked to, or the way that they should have been, or, you know, had input the way they should have. So I, you know, would have liked to seen this from the beginning to have a more collaborative effort with student services and the and MUTA. So that's my comments. Thank you.
You know, I'd like to add something to that too. This is Paul Allison. And, you know, we don't have the support from MUTA yet. And it sounds like you're saying we're going to be talking to them every week. So I don't understand why we're rushing this through now. This is something that we could, you know, postpone table until our next meeting, I think, even though we only have 58 days left until school opens. You know, I still have plenty of time to get this resolution to go through if we need it. That's it.
This is Susan Scott. My concern would be the fact that I do understand that they will have a chance to go in perhaps and make any adjustments, or that the personnel will be working with MUTA and the teachers so that they can try to have somewhere to start as they continue to try to work on something that's going to work for our school district. Not to be left out of anything, MUTA and the teachers, it'll probably, you know, it'll be really good to have them to take a big active part in it. And that's what I'm understanding that's going to happen. Because of our time restraint, we need to start somewhere so that we can have something to work with. That's what I'm under the impression of.
Yeah, this is
Brandon Davis, and let me finish. I feel this is the beginning of a discussion. And where this ends with the MOU is where it ends. Consistency of a grading and having the parent and student have ample access to their progress is beyond why haven't we had this there before. So to me, this is where we should have been a long time ago. So it's time to get there. And it's too bad that it's happening under these circumstances. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Jeff Boom. Randy, I agree with you. And, you know, we kind of got the cart ahead of the horse a little bit here. These are the discussions that finally, it sounds like, happened today that should have started, you know, a month or a month and a half ago. We should have hammered out this MOU, and so we would have all been on the same page. Instead, we have all this animosity and distrust going on between administration and the Teachers Association, and it didn't need to happen that way.
This is Gary Cena. This is set in direction. This is, as we go through this process, we're getting input and stakeholders, MUTA, teachers, people are engaged in providing input and having a discussion, and people have been aware of this. High 90% of teachers already use this and practice this. The essence of what we're about and what we're doing is serving students and parents. And for students and parents to have a standard system of grading so that it's consistent, they're able to communicate, they're able to understand, that's crucial in these times and in distance learning. So in terms of discussion and input, this isn't an issue to negotiate. This is an issue to determine direction. The board determines direction and policy. And so this is a direction where and teachers have had much input in this, and teachers are demonstrating with their practice. 99% of them already use these systems. And so it's just making it so that it's standard for everyone, so that there's not communication gaps, or parents have to struggle to find other means to find out what grades are, or to learn what the progress is for their student. And so where MUTA membership has been involved. MUTA membership already uses this. MUTA leadership, it was involved and had input. MUTA leadership's role comes in bargaining the effects and the impact of the direction. And so that's what's being brought before the board. Based on the input that we received, this is a recommendation that we are making. And so the board sets the direction. And on Monday, we'll negotiate with MUTA the effects and the impacts of this direction. And
can I add something to what Gary just said? You know, sure. I've been both a MUTA member, a MUTA executive member, and a MUTA board. And I've been a teacher in this district. I have a graduate degree in technology and computer applications. And I've been a user of both Aries and Illuminate, you know, for a number of years. And I'll tell you, with all the education I have in technology, those were two of the most complicated, difficult programs for non-users to learn how to use. Now, I would hope that in the last 5 years since I used them, that they have made vast improvements in them. And as far as having 99% or 90% of the teachers approving of these resolutions, you know, teachers I've talked to don't. And sure, I haven't talked to, you know, all 500 teachers in the district, but I have an awful lot of teachers that are really ticked off that we're not listening to the teachers. We're just listening to the administration and just going along with stuff. And I'm sorry, I support the teachers. And I really wish the board would too. We have plenty of time to use these programs or find alternatives, but I think we really need to listen to the teachers and create an MOU. I mean, we're just slapping those teachers in the face by just saying, okay, well, we're going to do this. Well, come on. There's teachers that are saying, look, this is what we want to do. Listen to them. Thank you. I'm done.
Well, my only comment is I don't think we have a lot of time, and I do think that we have to make some movements, and we need to try to move the direction forward in the district. So I think time is of the essence.
And I agree with you, Randy. I just feel that without setting a goal, which is what the board does, it sets an objective and a direction. Without that, you're sitting there just going around like somebody mentioned a hamster cage business. And I just feel that we need to move forward. We have parents who are wondering what the heck is going to go on. We have teachers wondering what the heck is going on and on. And unfortunately, it means setting one step in front of another. And we all know how difficult this is. But without that first step, you can't move forward. So I believe that what the staff at the district office presented is legitimate and is well presented. And yeah, you're going to have people who don't get it, who don't want it, who want to do something else. That's not the situation we're in. We're in a situation where we're trying to adapt to an evolving situation that involves people's health. And that's not something that's frivolous. I don't care how much other people want to say it's not. So I feel that we have to move forward with legitimate proposals and then work through the process of implementing them. Thank you.
Any more comments or questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve by Randy Davis.
Motion to approve by Randy Davis. Is there a second?
I'll second it. Jim Fleury.
Second by Trustee Fleury. Roll call vote. Randy Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
No.
Was that no, Jeff? I think it was. Trustee Allison?
No.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
No.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carries. Four yes, three no. Okay, looks like that was the last. I just want to thank all of the participants that were tuned in to our board meeting tonight. And everybody be safe, and thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
Good night.
Be safe.